Gregory v. Northam et al., Joseph E. Blackburn, Jr., Appellant's Counsel, Toby J. Heitens, Solicitor General, Appellee's Counsel.
Mr. Blackburn, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Mr. Chief Justice Lemons and Justices of our Supreme Court. I'm here today representing a man named William Gregory, who is the great-grandson of two of the grantors to the Commonwealth of what we know as the Lee Circle. And I am going to do my best today to convince you that he is the owner of an easement in Gross in the Lee Circle, and that is an interest in land, and he owns that to this day. The case, the leading case regarding easements in Gross, is the Blackman case that was cited by both Mr. Heitens, myself, and the professors in their law brief. The Blackman case is the case that was, the opinion was authored by Judge Koontz, and it's a case that Judge Marchant, the trial judge, characterized as a basic treatise on easement and gross law and what easements and gross are. The Commonwealth in the governor's brief, as well as the professors, in citing the Blackman case, they only cite parts of the Blackman case that reference what the common law was. But if we read the Blackman case closely, and the key page is page 78 of that, Justice Koontz said, after saying what the common law was, he said, by statute, however, Virginia has long ago abrogated common law restrictions on the transfer of interest in land by declaring that any interest in or claim to real estate may be disposed of by deed or will. He cited an 1887 case in saying that. And further down on that page, he said, the significance of this statutory change in the common law is manifest. So one of the cases that Justice Koontz cites in that Blackman case is an old case. It's a 1980 case. It's the City of Richmond versus Richmond Sand case, and it was decided in 1918. And it cites 1887 law, which was from the Code of 1887, 3 years before the deed we have in question. And in that case, Justice Whittle said these words. He said, if it is to be regarded as an easement in gross, it is still an interest in land, in quotes, an interest in land, and therefore may be disposed of by deed or will under the statutes of this state. So we go back as far as 1918, where this court recognized that an easement in gross is an interest in land. And he cites Code Section 2418, which I was able to find in your law library, that is the same code section that Justice Koontz was referencing in the Blackman case. He also cites Section 2548 of the 1887 Code. And I tell you this because that code section was the code section on the statutes of intestacy. And I say that because the trial judge made a comment that there's a break in the chain of title from Mr. Gregory's grandparents to himself, because some of his ancestors died without wills and he would have inherited by intestacy. And I think Justice Whittle recognized that just because the law says you can transfer any interest in land by deed or will, doesn't mean there wasn't, that statutes of intestacy didn't also apply. So since at least 1887, this court has recognized that an easement in gross is an interest in land. And Mr. Gregory owns that interest in land because he either got it through wills from his ancestors or through intestate succession. And The Blackmun case goes on to talk about the Lester Cole case. And in the Lester Cole case, there was dictum. Justice Koontz characterized it as dictum. In the Lester Cole case, referencing an easement in Gross, the court said such an easement cannot be transferred by the individual to whom it was originally given, nor can it pass by inheritance. Well, that was dictum. That case came out 43 years after the Richmond Sand Company, and obviously says the exact opposite of what the 1918 case said. And Justice Koontz points out on page 78 of his opinion in Blackmun that the legislature the next year added the words including an easement in Gross as being what transfers by deed or will. But Justice Koontz points out that the Acts of Assembly said that the purpose of that statute was to make clear the transferability of easements in Gross. Didn't change anything about the substance, but because of the Lester Cole case, the legislature felt the need to come back and make clear that an easement in Gross was included in there as an interest in land. And Justice Koontz later on down refers to that 1962 amendment as a clarification. It wasn't a change in the substantive law. Judge Marchant made a point on page, this is on 119 of the appendix, in his letter opinion, and I think this is a key point of whether or not William Gregory owns an easement in Gross. He said the grantors of the 1887 deed also signed the 1890 deed. So that would include Mr. Gregory's great-grandparents. Conveying the property from the Lee Monument Association to the Commonwealth of Virginia, signifying the intention that the 1887 grantors be beneficiaries of the covenants included within the 1890 deed. And that is true. That's the reason William Gregory's grandparents also signed the 1890 deed. They had transferred all of their interest in the Lee Circle to the Lee Monument Association in 1887. The question is, why would they also sign the 1890 deed? And the answer is clear. In the first part of that 1890 deed, it references that the Lee Monument Association is through with its purpose and it's basically going to become non-existent. So in 1890, knowing that easements and Gross were transferable, they had the grantors of the 1887 deed join in the 1890 deed to be beneficiaries of the covenants made by the Commonwealth in the 1890 deed. Those covenants created that easement in Gross. And if the governor 2 years later had changed his mind and wanted to take the monument down in 1892, Mr. Gregory's great-grandparents could have stopped that. So the question is, was that an easement in Gross that they got in 1890? And if so, is Mr. Gregory one of the possessors today of that easement in Gross that creates a servitude upon the Lee Circle? And Mr. Gregory's here asking you to find that he does own that easement in Gross. He does have the veto power. To answer something Mr. Hayton said in the earlier case, he is here to stop the sovereign from doing what the sovereign can't do and to stop the sovereign from breaking its word. And I'd like to reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal, please.
All right, you have 5 minutes, 56 seconds.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Hayton, let's hear from you in this case.
Good morning again, Your Honors. Again, my name is Toby Heitens, here with Attorney General Herring on behalf of the appellees. Your Honors, this case fails for all of the reasons that we've explained why the Taylor claims fail, and it fails for a series of additional reasons set forth on pages 65 to 67 of our consolidated brief. In short, No court has ever recognized a personal, inheritable right to dictate the content of core government speech about a matter of racial equality, and this court should not be the first one ever to do so. Accordingly, unless the court has further questions, the Commonwealth urges this court to affirm the circuit court judgment, and we waive further oral argument in this case.
All right. Mr. Blackburn, 5 minutes, 57 seconds.
Well, he referenced his earlier argument. I will just comment about one thing he said in his earlier argument. He said that the sovereign can take away property rights by just passing a law. I certainly hope that's not true. I can't imagine in our country that the sovereign can take away property rights by just passing a law. Mr. Gregory has a property right in this, in his easement in Groves. There's a servitude upon this lease circle that came about with a solemn promise by the governor of Virginia in 1890, and Mr. Gregory just asked you to enforce that. Thank you so much.
All right, counsel, thank you for your arguments. The clerk will call the next case.